Harper Audio presents I Am Number 4, The Lost Files, Rebel Allies, by Pittacus Lore. Performed by Jonathan McLean and Cherise Booth.
The Fugitive. Chapter 1. You're an idiot, Mark James. This is the thought that screams through my head every 100 miles or so on the road when I have a moment of self-doubt. Or maybe it's a moment of clarity. I don't really know which. But when I face the facts that I've stolen an FBI agent's laptop, pissed off some evil aliens, and am now driving across the country in order to try to find my missing ex-girlfriend Sarah, who happens to be dating a good alien, I can't help but think it's true. I'm an idiot. Or I'm crazy. Or both. Whatever I am, it's too late to go back to being who I was before aliens blew up my school and took over my town. Not too long ago, I was hot shit at Paradise High, with a bright future ahead of me. Now I'm the dude who's wanted by government agencies and bad ETs from the planet Sharkface. I down an energy drink and crush the can in my fist, tossing it to the passenger seat floorboard where it finds a home with a bunch of its empty brothers. I've been on the road for about 19 hours, and I didn't exactly start on a full night's sleep. The only thing keeping me going is a mixture of adrenaline, worrying about Sarah, and what are probably enough energy drinks to kill an elephant. One glance in the rearview mirror tells me I'm way overdue for sleep, my eyes all bloodshot and dark-looking. But I don't have time to take things easy. Sarah's in Dulce, or at least that's what the email I read on the stolen FBI laptop said. Before I tried to access a file called MoogPro and the whole computer shut down. Now the computer won't even turn on. It's just sitting on my back floorboard wrapped in my letter jacket. I try not to think about what the FBI or the Moogs might be doing to Sarah. I can hardly even wrap my head around the fact that the FBI, or at least the agents in Paradise, are working with the aliens. Instead, I focus on the fact that I'm on my way to bust her out, somehow. After a few more hours of empty roads, on my 1,500-mile-in-one-day journey from Ohio to New Mexico, I'll be there to try to save her. Me. Alone. Against a bunch of pale-ass aliens and probably the FBI, NSA, and the Illuminati or whatever. My phone dings, a burner. One I bought at a truck stop an hour outside of Paradise. The sound reminds me that I'm not technically alone on my mission to save Sarah. There's someone helping me. He's the only person who has this number. I look at the text. Guard. Getting close to the NM border. I glance up to see a sign on the side of the road telling me that Colorado State Highway 17 will turn into New Mexico State Highway 17 in 10 miles. Guard has been weirdly good at guessing where I'm at since I've been on the road. I text him back saying I'm about 10 minutes out. Almost as soon as the message goes through, I get another ding. Guard. Gas station on the NM side of the border. On the right. Pull off there. I've got some stuff for you. My brain basically explodes when I read this. I'm actually going to be face to face with Guard. Head conspiracy theorist at the Walk Among Us website. Hacker extraordinaire and kind of my only friend now that Sarah's gone. Even though I've never met him. Even though I've never even talked to him on the phone. Because he's as obsessed with his own privacy as he is with the Mogadorians and Lorik. Okay. So maybe we aren't friends exactly. I guess we're more like partners in all this alien shit. He's the computer brains, and I'm the good-looking brawn, who's going to save the girl and then figure out a way to keep what happened in Paradise from going down anywhere else. The idea of being face-to-face with Guard sends my thoughts into overdrive as I start imagining us pulling some badass action movie moves while we storm the alien base in Dulce, liberating anyone who's been taken hostage by the Moogs in a montage of explosions. Then the pounding in my chest starts to drum faster, and I remember that this is real life, no matter how strange it all seems. I think of the huge Moog dude I saw while I was acting like a spy at the police station in Paradise. He was a black-eyed giant, built like a professional linebacker. He easily had 200 pounds on me and was probably packing all kinds of alien weapons. Then I think back to all the grossest shit Moogs we faced at the school. I mean, I managed to fight my way out of that whole mess and protected Sarah in the process, but the idea of going up against those guys again makes me want to turn around and head back home. I crank up the radio and tell myself, it'll all work out. I'll be okay. I'll save Sarah. Guard and I will do it together. He'll know what to do. It's 2 in the morning when I cross the border from Colorado into New Mexico. Sure enough, there's an old-looking gas station at the first exit. This time of night, the place looks deserted. It's only as I turn into the station that my head throbs and I wonder if I'm in danger for some reason. But that's impossible. I've been super careful, and God knows Guard isn't going to screw up on his end when it comes to flying under the radar. I still feel uneasy, though. I blame the sudden paranoia on my lack of sleep. I park at one of the pumps because it's the only place that's lit up, loud industrial lights buzzing overhead. Being under the light makes everything else seem that much darker, so I flash my headlights twice, half to get a better look at the area around me and half because I've seen enough movies about gangs and secret meetings to know this is sometimes a sign. No one appears, though, so I jump out and start to gas up since I'm already stopped, keeping my eyes on the lookout for any movement. I'm 5 gallons in when a tall figure emerges from the darkness of the side of the station. Guard? I call out. The figure doesn't answer, which isn't exactly a good sign. I suddenly wish I had a weapon other than my throwing arm. A perfect pass isn't going to protect me if this dude's a Moog. My heart beats so loud I'm guessing the other person can hear it over the buzzing lights. I clutch my fingers around the gas pump. If things go bad for me, maybe I can hose the dude down and throw him off balance long enough to make a break for it. Fortunately, I luck out. It's obvious from the moment the person steps into the light that she's no Moog. First off, I don't even know if there are Moog women. Secondly, she's dark-skinned, unlike any Moog I've seen. She doesn't exactly scream FBI either. She's got on a motorcycle helmet that leaves just her face exposed. Between that and the form-fitting leather jacket, I'm guessing she's got a bike stashed on the other side of the gas station. I can't get too relieved, though, because she looks like she's pissed off as she approaches. That's when I notice there's a box under one of her arms. I keep my hand on the gas pump. I don't realize she's taller than me, by about a head, until she's a few yards away. I don't think I've ever met a girl who's made me feel so short. Actually, she's not really a girl. I'm guessing she's in her mid-30s, but with the crappy light in her helmet, it's hard to tell exactly. I murmur. I don't really know what to say. I'm not sure.
Jolly Roger?
She asks. It takes me a second to answer because no one's ever called me that in real life. Hell, I don't think I've ever even said the words out loud. Technically, I am Jolly Roger 182, at least when I'm blogging on They Walk Among Us. Yeah? I ask, as if it's a question. I'm still trying to wrap my head around what's happening when she pushes the box into my chest.
Sign here,
she says, holding a pen out to me with one hand and pointing to a sheet of paper on top of the box with another. I do as I'm told, only halfway registering the courier service listed at the top of the page. Sure enough, the package is intended for Jolly Roger, This must be Guard's way of keeping my real name out of the equation, which is smart, I guess. Still, I can't help but be bummed that he sent a courier instead of coming to the station himself. I thought I was finally going to meet Guard. I thought we were going to team up. The woman keeps her eyes focused on me, not blinking. Her intensity creeps me out a little bit, keeping me from wallowing too much in the fact that Guard's not here. She takes the page back after I've signed for the package, but keeps staring at me, like her dark brown eyes are trying to read my mind. Finally, she speaks.
You should get off the road and get some sleep.
Her voice is stern, more of a command than a suggestion.
You look like shit.
And then she walks back off into the darkness. I fling open my truck door and get in, tearing into the box. I pull out all kinds of stuff I don't recognize. Computer equipment, maps, little electronic gadgets. There's a smartphone in the box, along with a stack of cash that's got to be at least a grand. There's even a black, padded messenger bag. I'm guessing to carry all this stuff around in. What is going on? Suddenly, the phone screen comes to life, powering on. After a few seconds, a text message pops up. Guard, thought you could use some supplies. Instructions are on the phone. Careful, they'll self-delete after you've read them. Good luck. G. Guard sent me a care package. There's no return address on the box. I jump out of the truck cab, but it's too late. I can already hear the whine of the courier's bike fading away somewhere down the highway. The gas pump clicks. I'm about to pack everything back into the box when I notice one last item at the bottom of it. I pick it up. A metal cylinder about half an inch wide and 4 inches tall that's covered in weird markings I've never seen before. Near the top is what appears to be a button. There's a post-it note attached that has, "Do not press me," written on it. I'm suddenly afraid I'm holding some sort of next-gen bomb. Looking back and forth between the possible weapon and the stack of cash, one big question is louder than all the others going through my head. Who the fuck is Guard? Chapter 2. I pack everything up and get back on the highway. I'm only a few hours from Dulce, and now that I have a bunch of weird gadgets and cash, the last place I want to be is parked out in the open under the lights of a gas station. So I drive, fighting the urge to go over all the notes on the smartphone. Once I get close to where the secret Dulce base is supposed to be located, I give in and pull off to the side of the road to get my shit together. I can't exactly charge into a secret government base and demand to talk to Sarah Hart. I start by taking a full inventory of the stuff Guard sent me, carefully reading the notes on the new phone, which I'm supposed to use to communicate with my unseen partner now. Most of the stuff in the box seems to be computer-related. There's a little netbook that's got a stealthy Wi-Fi hotspot installed inside that will bounce my location to satellites around the world, making anything I do impossible to track. That way, I'll be able to communicate with people and upload stuff to They Walk Among Us without worrying about a bunch of black helicopters swooping in on me. There's also a USB drive that's supposed to help get the FBI computer I swiped up and running again. Guard thinks that the files I saw disappearing before the screen went black may still be hidden somewhere on the hard drive. The trigger-looking thing covered in weird symbols is some kind of cutting-edge grenade. Guard says it should only be used in a life-or-death situation. All I have to do is press the button on top and throw. There's no explanation as to what it actually does or what the symbols mean. They don't look like any alphabet I've ever seen. And I can't help but wonder if Guard somehow managed to snag an alien weapon. I kind of wish he'd also sent along a laser pistol or something. The cash is self-explanatory. Well, not really. The fact that Guard would just up and send $1,500, I counted, To someone he sorta knows makes me wonder if he's actually some kind of hacker billionaire operating out of a secret lair that looks like something out of the Matrix. I shove everything into the messenger bag, including my old burner phone. As cool as all the gadgets are, the most helpful thing in the box for me right now is the stack of satellite images and blueprints of the Dulce base. All the maps I found online showed nothing but desert where it should have been, but the stuff Guard sent is comprehensive. Laying out the big-ass complex and giving me a good idea of the size of the thing and where I might be able to sneak in. There are even blueprints of what the underground levels of the place might look like. It's intimidating as hell. Flipping through the maps, I don't know how I'm going to be able to find Sarah in this mess. She could be anywhere. She might not even be there anymore. My body feels like it's sinking in on itself as I consider how impossible this mission is. How stupid I am for thinking I can just waltz in and rescue her. I crack open another energy drink, guzzling it. Man up, Mark. I put my truck into gear and get back on the road. I'll have a better idea of what my plan should be once I get there. Surely. After about 15 minutes of driving, I take an unmarked side road that's circled on the maps Guard sent. The base shouldn't be that far now. I turn off my lights and drive slowly. There's just enough moonlight for me to sort of be able to see. For a few minutes, I see nothing but hilly desert in front of me. But then I finally spot a tall chain-link fence in the distance that's topped in razor wire. That's got to be it. There doesn't appear to be any gate or path leading to the base perimeter. So, I say a quick prayer, blow a kiss to the dashboard of my truck and off-road through the desert, trying my best to avoid any big shrubs or rocks and pretending not to worry about the fact that, for all I know, there could be mines and stuff all around out here. But there aren't any. Or at least I don't hit any of them. Instead, I get within a few yards of the fence and park. Just in case there are hidden cameras around, I fish a baseball cap out of the back of my truck and pull it down low, trying to hide my face as much as I can. The fence is at least 3 times as tall as I am, and I can't see most of the base because of a mesa or hill or whatever that hides it. There aren't any lights on, or at least not outside. I wish I'd thought to buy night vision goggles or that Guard had sent some along. I squint, trying to make out what all the dark shapes are in the moonlight. It looks like there are burned-out Humvees and other kinds of military vehicles littering the desert around the base. From what I can tell, something crazy definitely went down here recently. Something epic. It reminds me of paradise and the way my school looked after John Henri VI, after we'd all fought and escaped from the Moogs. This is the kind of shit that happens when good aliens and bad aliens collide. Were the Guard here? Was John Smith here? Maybe Sarah doesn't even need saving anymore. But she would have contacted me if she were free, right? And what if dumbass John and his other ET friends did try to save Sarah but got captured? What if I'm the only person left to bail them out? I have to get in there. Now. Okay, Mark, I say. Time to save the day. I walk beside the fence for a few minutes, trying to see more of the base, while at the same time wondering if I've got anything in my truck that might be able to snip a hole in the chain length. But I luck out, because I get to a section of the fence that's been knocked down, maybe even blown apart, judging by the mangled little pieces of metal littering the ground. That's my entrance. I think about going back to the truck to grab the grenade thing Guard sent with me, but I'm kind of scared that it'd go off in my pocket accidentally since its trigger is apparently just a button. Probably the lamest possible outcome of the night would be me trying to be a hero and blowing myself up instead, leaving Sarah all alone in a cell. So instead, I take a deep breath and step through the hole in the fence. Once I'm inside the perimeter of the base, I jog towards some of the wreckage dotting the desert hills and look for a way to access the main facility, which, according to Guard's maps, is mostly located underground. I try to stay low and out of sight, hiding behind half-crumpled walls and wishing I'd thought to buy darker clothes, since my white t-shirt probably makes me stand out in the darkness. But I keep moving, eventually crouching behind what looks like a collapsed watchtower. What the hell happened here? Some of the buildings and vehicles around the main facility look like they've exploded, all scorched and burned out, while others appear to have been blown apart by some other force. Maybe telekinesis? Maybe John or the other guard really were here? The place looks completely vacant, decommissioned. Half of my brain says I should just forget about trying to find a way inside and go back to my truck, since it looks like there's no way a major FBI or MOG operation could still be working out of this broken-down base. But I can't do that. I've come too far. And if there's any chance that Sarah is still inside. I think I see a shadow move out of the corner of my eye. I hold my breath and stand frozen for what feels like a long time, trying to figure out if there's anyone around, squinting in the moonlight. But there's nothing. The wind whistles and I exhale. I run to one of the charred Humvees, staying close to the ground, and roll behind it. In movies, spies and badass cops are always rolling behind cover, but all this does is get sand all over me and in my eyes. I try not to cough as I blink for half a minute, telling myself not to be a douchebag and try to pull any fancy moves anymore. I just have to get in, find Sarah, and get out. I spot my entry point. There's a bunch of debris lying around a pit about 20 yards away from me where it looks like the ground has collapsed into some kind of sinkhole. I can just make out a few walls and stuff below. The hole must lead straight down into the facility. All I have to do is jump down and I'm in. No locks to try to get past or anything. Whatever battle took place here has given me a perfect way into the facility. I start for the hole, keeping my eyes peeled for any movement. I'm halfway between it and the Humvee when a blinding light appears from somewhere to my right. Shit. My eyes burn, and I can barely see as I try to run back to the Humvee to take cover. But then there's another light that looks like it's coming from on top of the wreckage. And then, there are lights everywhere, stunning me, making it impossible for me to even know which direction I'm facing anymore. I'm not sure if this is some kind of defense system, or if I'm about to be beamed up to a MOG ship or something. My head spins and I start to hyperventilate, completely regretting not bringing the grenade with me. A figure emerges from the light, silhouetted. I can't make out a face or anything, can't tell if it's even a human or a MOG. I plant my feet and clench my fists. If this is my last stand, I have to make it count for something. I shout the first thing that comes to my mind. I've come for Sarah. But before I can finish the sentence, someone attacks me from behind and there's fabric over my head. Everything goes dark. I swing around, flailing wildly, but I'm struggling against a bunch of people, and before I know it, my hands are cuffed in front of me. I've made a big mistake. I'm dragged through the sand until I'm inside some kind of building, my feet kicking against a hard floor. I struggle and shout the whole time, but no one says anything to me. It's like they can't even hear me. Not until they start pushing me down some stairs and one of them threatens to tase me if I don't shut up. So I do. The bag over my head is scratchy against my face and the air inside is thick with my rapid breathing. The more I think about what's happening, the faster and deeper my breath gets, until I'm sucking a bunch of fabric into my mouth every time I inhale. I'm afraid I'm going to die here. I'm going to be MOG food. Or I'm going to end up a human lab rat. My parents will never know what happened to me. I'm going to become an unsolved case, just some good-looking dude with an all-American past as Ohio's greatest quarterback that ends up on a bunch of missing posters for a while. You're an idiot, Mark. Someone forces me into a chair and rips the bag off my head. The lights are way too bright and I wince. I try to cover my eyes with my cuffed hands when I realize they've been chained to the center of a metal desk in front of me. I pull against them with all my strength, but there's no way I'm breaking free. I am in way over my head. I look around frantically. The room is small and looks empty except for the high-powered lamp shining right in my face. And there's nothing in here but me, the desk, and the light. And a voice. "Mark James," a woman says. It's a voice I sort of recognize but can't really place. I hear a few footsteps from somewhere behind the light and squint as the woman comes into view. And then I realize why I know her. She has red hair pulled back in a severe ponytail. One of her arms is in a sling, peeking out from underneath her black jacket. She couldn't look more pissed off. "Agent Walker?" I ask. She sighs and raises her good arm to her face. She closes her eyes and rubs one temple. "You're a real pain in the ass, kid," she says, shaking her head. Chapter 3. It's oddly comforting to see Agent Walker instead of a mug, but I'm not sure how much of a lucky break it is since she's sneering at me. After being dragged into the base with a bag over my head, I can't stop my hands from shaking. The chains around my wrists keep jingling. It's some kind of cosmic joke that she's the one here. Like I've traveled all this way but ended up exactly where I started. I try to think back to the last time I saw her, when she came to my grandmother's house asking about Sarah. The morning I found out she was missing. Walker had been her steely self, but there'd been a moment or two in our conversation when it had actually seemed like she was letting her hard-ass persona slip and was acting like a real human. Someone who cared about the fact that the girl she'd been keeping a protective watch over had disappeared. She seemed sympathetic. But I have no idea how much of the Moog Kool-Aid she's been drinking since then, and I know I can't count on her to cut me any slack. I'm in trouble for trespassing, but there's a chance that she doesn't know anything about the computer I swiped yet. There's still a chance I can talk my way out of this. Maybe. Hi, I say. I raise my hands to wave, but all that does is remind both of us that I'm chained to the table. "What the hell are you doing here?" she asks. Her voice sounds like she's equally pissed and impressed, so at least I have that last bit going for me. "I'm on vacation," I say. I'm painfully aware of how lame of an excuse this is, so I keep talking. "Well, not vacation, really. The University of Arizona offered me a football scholarship, so I'm on my way down there and figured I'd stop and check out this base I'd heard about on Ancient ETs or one of those shows, and..." "Don't try to bullshit me, Mark," she says. "You're terrible at it." I try to laugh. No. I'm just a little on edge because of all the black bags and stuff, you know? This place looked abandoned from the outside. I didn't think anyone was here." Her smile comes back, the one she always had in paradise. The fake one that says, "No matter what you may think, I'm the one in charge here." "Right," she says. "I'm sure your nervousness has nothing to do with, oh, I don't know, a stolen FBI computer?" Well, so much for trying to charm my way out of this. I'm screwed. I'm in so far over my head that I can barely breathe. This fact must register on my face because she keeps talking. "Do you have any idea what the punishment for stealing classified intel like that is?"
"I don't know what you're talking about," I mutter.
My voice actually cracks a little, like I'm a damned 13-year-old. I clear my throat and try to regroup. She shakes her head. "Why did you come here?"
"I told you, Arizona State."
"Earlier you said University of Arizona. We both know that's not true."
I try to remain calm. I should probably call someone to let them know I'm here, I say, trying to remember all the rules of due process I learned from my dad over the years. If you're arresting me for trespassing, I still get a phone call, right? And shouldn't I have a lawyer or something here too? At this, she starts to laugh. It starts out genuine, like I've just told the best joke she's ever heard, but by the time it dies down, the laughter is sad. Start talking, she finally says, or I'm going to have to bring in someone less understanding than me to interrogate you. We stare at each other. At this point, I figure there's no harm in telling her the truth, or at least some of it. I have nothing else to lose. I'm here for Sarah, I say. I know you took her. Walker purses her lips. She keeps her eyes trained on me. I swear she hasn't blinked since I sat down. And you think Sarah is here because of something you read on the computer you stole? You were supposed to be protecting her, I say, raising my voice. All I can think of now is how much Walker and her fellow agents lied to us in Paradise. How they watched us, worked with the Moogs. How they took my dad's job away from him and kidnapped the only person who was keeping me sane. Isn't that the bullshit you told me and Sarah? That you were going to make sure nothing bad happened to us? I should have known you were all working for the damned Moogs and... Walker slams her fist down on the table between us. I shut up. She lets out a long breath and then starts to pace around the room. I didn't know Sarah Hart was going to be taken, she says. When I came to your house looking for her, it's because I really was concerned. Concerned about her? Or that you'd lost a potential lead on John Smith? I spit. Both. She says, turning back to me. If you're here, that means you know a lot more about what's going on in the world than most. At least enough to know how bad things could get for all of us. Hell, you probably know more than me at this point after stealing that computer. I shrug. The laptop basically self-destructed. I don't know anything important. I'm so obviously out of my league here, and there's nothing I can do but apologize and try to convince this woman that I'm a dumb jock. Maybe they haven't found my truck and searched it yet. I don't have it with me. But if you let me go, I can get it and send it back to the guy I took it from. What's his name, Agent? Purdy, Walker says. There's weight to her voice when she says his name. Something in her face changes. Yeah, I say. The piggish-looking dude. She shoots me a look that reminds me of one my grandmother only saved for the worst offenses. He doesn't need it anymore, she says slowly. He's dead. She's quiet for a few seconds, as if she's trying to work something out in her head. Maybe I'm just desperate to not be thrown into FBI prison, but Agent Walker actually looks upset about Purdy being gone. I'm sorry, I say. Because it's the only thing I can think of. She nods, but remains quiet. Was there some kind of attack or something? I ask. This sounds like a question about Purdy, but what I really want to know is anything about Sarah, to gather info.
A lot has changed around here in the last few days, she finally says. I'm not sure anything will be the same from now on. For the Bureau, for us, hell, even for Earth. The things I've seen.
Her mind wanders off for a moment.
Like what? I ask.
She shakes her head.
What am I going to do with you? I have much bigger things to take care of and incredibly limited resources.
She adjusts her sling and grimaces a little.
We should have already left this place. It's only a matter of time before they realize what we're doing.
I don't know who they is exactly, but I see my opening. Well, I start reluctantly. You could always pretend I was never here and let me and Sarah go. She starts circling the table, ignoring my proposition.
I read your files in Paradise, Mark. You were an athlete. Not the best in school academically, but you excelled at what interested you.
Thanks.
We never really thought you were involved in any of this, but then you went and stole Purdy's computer. You've gotten yourself into quite a predicament. There are other agents from the Bureau out there trying to hunt you down as we speak.
She stops beside me.
I only took that computer because I was trying to find Sarah, I say.
Which is true, but also leaves out the part about me being an editor for They Walk Among Us and someone who's trying to dig up any information he can about the Moogs and leak it to the public. The last thing I want is for her or the government to realize that I'm also Jolly Roger 182. As a teenager trying to track down his ex, I'm kind of excusable, but as a rebel blogger, I'm probably a big, fat target.
I figured as much, she says. But I don't really think most of our agents, or the people they're now working for, really care. If I thought it would actually ensure your safety, I'd put you into protective custody immediately. As things are, though, I think that would be on par with throwing you to the wolves. And I don't exactly have men to spare here.
She seems like she's talking more to herself now, hardly looking at me.
I try to comprehend all the things she's just told me. You aren't working with the Moogs, then?
She twists her lips a little bit into a small frown.
I work for the American people,
she says firmly.
For a while, that meant working with the Mogadorians. Now I'm not so sure.
The door behind me opens, and another agent comes in. One I remember as being Walker's flunky in Paradise. I think his name was Nodo. He whispers something to Walker. Her posture goes rigid.
We'll move at 0800 hours, she says. I want every asset we can strip from this base loaded up before then. We can't be caught unprepared if things go south.
What about the agents still loyal to the Mogadorians?
Nodo asks.
Should we release them? The Moogs or the Bureau will send a team when they realize this base has gone dark. The agents will be fine. Let them sit and think about where their loyalties lie.
And him? Walker turns back to me, pursing her lips a little.
I'll deal with him, Walker says.
Nodo nods and hurries out of the room.
I take a deep breath and try my luck again. Take me to Sarah and let us go, I plead, leaning forward onto the desk. Please. I just want to make sure she's all right. If you can't protect us here, let us protect ourselves. We'll disappear.
Agent Walker looks at me for a few seconds before nodding.
Sarah's fine, she says,
and I breathe out a long sigh of relief.
Or she was, when they broke her out of here and destroyed most of this facility.
They? I ask. She snorts a little bit.
Who do you think? Your old friends who caused such a scene at Paradise High. John. Sarah's with John. Chapter 4.
Walker tells me to lay low, and that if she sees me again, she'll personally make sure that I'm shipped back to Paradise. Luckily, whatever she and the agents loyal to her are about to do must be more important than keeping tabs on me. Before I can try to pry any info about what's happening out of Walker, two agents are shoving me through the half-ruined top level of the facility. I want to ask them a million questions about what's going on and where they're going, but the fact that I'm being released at all has stunned me into silence, as if one question might send me straight into another interrogation room. The agents are just black specks in my rearview mirror silhouetted against the rising sun by the time I finally breathe. And then I'm screaming and shaking my steering wheel and trying to calm down about the fact that I, in all seriousness, could be being tortured in a secret prison instead of driving away. I pull Guard's messenger bag out from under the back seat, happy to see that Walker's agents either didn't care if I still had Purdy's computer or simply didn't have time to look through my stuff. I'm so relieved that I got out of there that I'm a good 15 miles away by the time I start to realize what all this means.
Sarah's been rescued by John, but that doesn't really mean she's safe, since her boyfriend is a walking target. What are the guard doing now? There are still a bunch of evil aliens gunning for them, not to mention the idiotic humans who've decided to work with the bad guys. What the hell am I supposed to do now? I turn to the one person who might have a clue. I text guard. Me. Dulce is a bust. FBI is abandoning it. Sarah's gone. I think John and others got her out. He gets back to me almost immediately. Guard. You got in and out and no one saw you? I'm impressed. Me. Nah. Ran into Agent Walker from Paradise. She let me go. I think she's turned against the Moogs. Guard. That could be helpful. Where are you going now? Me. No damn clue. Can't go home. Bad FBI are still looking for me. This whole time I've been so focused on trying to get Sarah out that I only really saw two possible outcomes. Me getting locked up with her, or me rescuing her, then going on an anti-Moog campaign to help save the world. Now that she's gone, my only real option is to try to find her. Again. I promised John when all this started that I'd keep her safe, but I'm doing this for me, not him. I want to make sure she's okay. Plus, if she's with the guard, she's the best link I have to everything that's going on. Whatever she knows can be used on They Walk Among Us to help warn everyone about what's happening with the Moogs and guard. Hell. Maybe I could even show photos or videos of John and his other alien friends doing crazy shit to convince people that these damned aliens I keep posting about are real. But first, I have to find Sarah. And I don't even know where to begin. She could be anywhere. And I have nothing to go off of. My new phone chirps. Guard, if you're still serious about fighting the Moogs, head towards Alabama. I can set up a base for you to work out of. You may have an easier time finding Sarah and John if you're not on the road so much, spending half your time driving. Guard, just take the long way there and stay out of sight for a few days, so I have some time to work everything out. And there he is again. A Hail Mary pass keeping me from feeling like a completely useless human being. Giving me my next task. I text him back. Me. Thanks, man. I stare back at the text, having one of those weird moments of clarity when I realize that I'm traveling across the country at the suggestion of some dude I've never met in order to help stop an alien invasion. I fire off another message. Me. Will I meet you in Alabama? It's a few minutes before I get a response this time. Guard. I'm not certain. I have some personal business to take care of. In the meantime, you might look into switching cars if you can. The FBI will have all your info. Sure. I'll just drive up to the next dealership I see and buy a new one, because that's exactly how the world works. I shake my head. I drive until I find a big-looking road that goes east and take it. After a while, I'm heading more south than anything, but I don't mind. I just want to get away before Walker decides that I really would be safer under her protection and sends some black-clad henchman out to get me. Plus, it sounds like Guard needs some time to get our new base or whatever set up. After a few hours of driving, I start to feel really strange and kind of like I'm dreaming, even though I'm making it a point to keep my eyes open as wide as possible to stay awake. I finally accept the fact that I've got to get off the road and start to weigh the pros and cons of sleeping on the side of the highway when I see a sign that tells me I'm only 20 miles outside of Santa Fe, which, honestly, I thought was in Nevada or Arizona and not New Mexico. Geography was never one of those subjects I took much interest in. On the upside, Santa Fe is a city I've actually heard of, which means that it's got to be pretty big. Or at least big enough for me to stay anonymous and find a place to sleep. Before I hit the city line, I see the sign for $39 rooms and pull into a place called Desert Oasis, which is a single story of motel rooms that look like they've seen better days.
It's sort of a pinkish-brown stucco building, with crumbling corners and long rows of flower beds outside the rooms that are filled with sticks and brown bushes that look like they'd disintegrate if I touched them. Considering I'm a person of interest to the FBI, it seems like the perfect place to hunker down for some Z's. The inside office is just a little waiting room with some ripped green vinyl chairs. There's a guy with a big brown mustache, a bad comb-over, and inch-thick glasses reading a torn-up paperback at the counter. I'd like a room, I say.
Sure,
the guy responds, hardly glancing up from his book. Name? I say, because I'm feeling a little out of my mind and apparently want to make it completely obvious that I'm trying to be incognito. I think of the name the courier called me. My other identity. Roger. The guy looks at me a second and then shakes his head, motioning to the book on the table in front of him.
I mean, you need to sign in there, he says. I'll also need a credit card on file for incidentals and an ID to go with it.
What if I don't have one? I try to say casually as I sign in with the name Jolly Roger, writing in cursive like I don't normally do. He shrugs, finally putting his book down.
Then you'd better have some other kind of collateral.
I thumb through my wallet, keeping it below the counter so the front desk guy can't see it.
Then I pull out $150, over $100 more than what the room costs.
I slide the bills over the counter. The guy looks back and forth between me and the cash. Then, finally, he tosses me a key.
Room number 4, he says.
Of course. Thanks, I mutter. On my way out, he calls after me.
If you make too much noise, I'll call the police. Damn kids come out here to drink and always end up.
But I slam the door behind me, and I don't hear the end of what he has to say. Besides, I'm not going to make any noise. And even if I did, I have serious doubts that the guy actually would call the police. More likely, he'd just demand another $100 from me. The room is just a bed, table, and a square tube TV with fake wood on the sides, like the one Nana kept in my grandfather's office. The place is dingy, and the faded brown bedspread is scratchy, but I'm just happy to not be sitting in my truck or a detention cell. I'm exhausted, but I am still wound up by everything that's happened in the last few hours, so after making sure the curtains are completely covering the windows and the door is bolted and chained, I fire up Guard's untraceable netbook. It's fancier than any computer I've ever seen. There's even a little fingerprint scanner on it. I follow instructions that pop up when the system is fully booted and set the computer to respond only to my thumbprint. Then I log into my personal email account. I'm looking for something from Sarah, telling me she's safe, that she got out and wants to make contact again because she knows I know what's happening and that I'd be worried about her. But there's nothing from her. There are some spam emails, a few chains of messages from my old teammates and friends in Paradise, and half a dozen from my family, all of which get filled with more and more capital letters and question marks the longer I've been away. I shake my head and sigh. I knew I'd be making them worry when I left Paradise in the middle of the night, but I was hoping I might be back sometime soon. Or at least that I'd be able to let them know I was with Sarah and that we were both safe. Maybe even make up a story about how we'd run away together. But now, I don't know what to tell them. All my earlier hopes seem stupid, like they never could have really worked out. How do I try to explain to people back in my hometown that I'm half a country away trying to track down my ex-girlfriend and a bunch of people from another planet? I start to reply to a message from my dad to tell him about the Moogs and how he needs to watch his back and probably just leave Paradise completely. But I know that if I tell him evil aliens and corrupt government officials are snooping around his town, taking up residence in his office even, he'll look into it. You'll start poking around and trying to play hero. And that's dangerous. I don't want him to get involved. And if the Moogs or FBI are intercepting my emails or something like that, one mention of them to Dad, and they'll be all over him. I don't want him to end up getting hurt because of something stupid I've done. And so I send back a reply that's not exactly a lie, but not really the whole truth. Dad, chasing after Sarah to try to bring her back to paradise where she belongs. Lost my phone. Sorry if I scared you guys. Be home soon. Don't worry, I'm okay. Mark. It's not much, but it'll have to do. I send it off and open up a new email, one I address to Sarah. And then I just start typing. Everything that's happened. Everything I'm worried about. In the end, after 1,000 words, I tell her that if she gets this, to write back. Please. I send that email off too. Unsure if it will ever make it to her. Scared that there's no Sarah for it to go to at all anymore. And that in the end, I'm going to be alone trying to warn people about the shark-faced aliens that might show up and destroy their lives. That I'll just be some crazy guy who no one believes. I know that if I just sit around waiting for a response, I'll go insane. I need to keep my mind occupied. And so I open up the Jolly Roger 182 email account that's connected to They Walk Among Us. This is something I can focus on. Something to occupy my time and energy when I'm not driving or trying to figure out how to contact Sarah. Plus, if I can help get the word out about the Lorik and Moogs, in a way, I might actually be helping. Making a difference. There are about 200 unread messages, tips, and comments in my inbox. I make it through about 15, mostly crackpot tips, but one about a weird-looking community in a super-rich suburb in Maryland I want to follow up on, before I pass out on the bed. I sleep for the rest of the day and night completely crashed. I wake up a little before noon, take a much-needed shower, and then spend an hour or two trying to make sense of the electronics Guard sent me. I plug the jump drive into Purdy's computer and hit the power button. The computer actually starts to make noise for the first time since it died in the diner, and my pulse starts to race. Yes! Guard, you genius mother... But the only thing that appears on the computer is a command screen full of what looks like a foreign language mixed with big lists of numbers. I'm scared that poking around too much will end up causing the thing to crash again, so I follow Guard's instructions carefully, running a series of tests or something on the machine using the jump drive. But nothing happens. Just gibberish that I can't figure out. In the meantime, I go back to the netbook and type up the blog post I've been thinking about since I saw the Moog in my dad's office and discovered that the FBI were working with the wrong aliens. I don't have any hard proof, just a story. But I can lay out for TWAU readers all the stuff that I know is true. The second after I post the blog, there's a knock on the door. I jump to my feet, searching for the weird grenade Guard sent along when I hear a voice from outside. Hey, Roger, the motel guy says. Checkout's in 10 minutes. Unless you want to spend another night, same fee. I gather my shit and hit the road. Chapter 5. I travel for a few days, forming a sort of routine. In El Paso, I swap my license plates out for a pair of Texas ones when I see a truck similar to mine in a McDonald's parking lot. I pick up supplies, a toothbrush, a case of energy drinks, some dark clothes in case I end up sneaking around at night again, at a drugstore in some podunk town near the border. Motels become my new home, because the people there don't ask questions or seem to care that I sometimes check in at weird hours. Also, cash has been pretty good at buying my anonymity with them. I drive towards Alabama, trying to avoid going into big cities or anywhere that I think FBI agents might be posted. I keep my radio tuned to 24-hour news stations, listening for anything that could possibly be Moog-related. When I'm not driving, I try to get info off Purdy's computer, but none of the systems running on Guard's jump drive have been able to get the damned thing functional yet. Every night before I go to sleep, I email Sarah. She hasn't responded. When I'm on the road, I've got one eye in my rearview mirror because no matter how stealthy I think I'm being or how good I know Guard's gadgets are, I can't help but feel like I'm being followed. I spend a lot of time telling myself that I'm being delusional. Sometimes I miss just being a dumb quarterback who had no idea what was going on in the rest of the world or even my own backyard. At least then I wasn't holding my breath every time anyone passed me on the highway for fear that they were Moogs or FBI agents trying to run me off the road. I spend a lot of time wandering around Texas, texting Guard on occasion to update him on where I am. He arranges for another care package to get sent to me, or to Jolly Roger, more specifically, and I retrieve it from the front desk of a motel outside of Abilene, enough to keep me fed and sheltered for a little while longer. Other than that, he's pretty much been on radio silence, responding to texts or emails at odd times, if at all. Whatever he's got going, his life must be pretty hectic. I just hope he can get the base set up soon so we can start doing some real work. And so I can learn who he is. It sucks being stuck in my truck or a musty motel room all the time. So I hop between coffee shops and diners for a few hours in the afternoons so I can pretend to have some sort of a normal life. And even then, I'll only stop at places that are empty and have secluded tables open in the back. Half a week or so after starting my trek towards Alabama, I camp out at a truck stop an hour outside of Dallas. The kind of place with bar stools up against a counter and a dozen different types of pie on display. In a corner booth, I multitask by watching the muted TV mounted over the counter and tuned to a news station, responding to TWAU emails on my netbook and keeping an eye on one of Guard's systems running on Purdy's laptop. I'm not sure what all Guard had installed on the USB drive he sent me, but the stolen laptop screen keeps blinking with lines of code that mean nothing to me. Hopefully that means the programs are working, and I'll be able to use the computer again soon so I can mine it for info. The waitress comes by. "Can I get you anything else?" she asks. "I'll take a refill," I say, nodding towards my cup of coffee but keeping my eyes on the screen. "You sure about that?" she asks. I pause and look up at her. She's old enough to be my mom, and her eyebrows are scrunched together. "It's just, that's your fifth cup, and..." She trails off, but her eyes land on my fingers. They rest on my keyboard, but they're twitching from the caffeine. I can feel my blood pulse behind my eyeballs. "I have a lot of work to do," I say. "I'll take another." She shrugs and leaves, and I rub my eyes. I probably look like a crazy person, or some kind of junkie who's wandered in off the streets. I've been staying up at night until I literally can't keep my eyes open any longer, then waking up to dreams of Moogs and FBI agents raiding my motel room after only a few hours of sleep. I start to go back to the computer when I notice a breaking news report on the TV. Some building in Chicago, called the John Hancock Center, is on fire. I almost ignore the whole thing to keep working on TWAU blog stuff, and then I see it, in the bottom corner of the frame, sitting on the roof of the burning building, as plain as day to anyone who's seen one before, a Mogadorian gun, the kind that looks like a cannon and wreaks havoc on an Ohio high school. This is no accidental fire. The Moogs are responsible for whatever's happening in Chicago. That can only mean one of two things. Either the Moogs were using the building as a base, or their enemies were. Meaning, the Guard were. Meaning, Sarah could have been there. "Turn that up," I say to no one in particular. When nobody responds, I talk again, louder. "Can someone turn this up?" The handful of people sitting at the counter look at me like I'm some kind of idiot. This is an emergency! Hey, kid, a big guy wearing a trucker hat says. He looks like a stand-in for Larry the Cable Guy. He nods to my booth. Why don't you just read about it on one of your computers over there and let us enjoy our afternoons? Anger surges through me, and for the briefest second, I think about jumping out of my booth and yelling at the guy. But there are more important things going on now. And besides, he's got a good point. My fingers fly over the keys as I scan developing news stories about what's happening in Chicago. There's little actual info, though. Eventually, I find a live stream and plug in my headphones in the hope that some of the talking heads will have more details about the situation. The stream shows helicopter footage of smoke billowing out of the building again, and I wish I knew how to record video from my screen. What I do know how to do is take a screen grab, so when the Moog weapon comes into view again, I save a bunch of photos before the video cuts back to some woman in a studio talking about how initial reports suggest the fire is the result of an electrical issue. Right. That definitely explains why there's an alien gun on the roof. I have to tell my readers the truth. The world needs to know. If the Moogs are ballsy enough to attack a building in the middle of Chicago, who knows what they might have in store for us next? I log on to They Walk Among Us, and I write up what is probably a complete typo-riddled post about what's going on in Chicago, or at least what I can gather based on what the media is saying and the footage I've seen. I include a few screen grabs of the Moog gun, pointing out that it's obvious this whole thing was more than just an electrical malfunction or something. At the end of the post, I ask anyone who's reading to be careful and to start looking for suspicious activity in their own towns and cities, because this could be the beginning of a full-scale invasion for all I know. Then I upload the post with a title that I hope will get people's attention. Moog Attack in Chicago. Is this the zero hour? The second after I hit publish, someone taps on my shoulder. I'm so in the zone that I didn't even realize anyone was beside me, and I jump so much that my legs bang against the table, my coffee cup rattles, and some silverware falls to the floor. The waitress takes a few steps away from me before slowly setting my check down. I realize that a few other people in the diner are looking at me. Maybe because I just jumped. Maybe because I was shouting for people to turn up the TV volume earlier. Jesus, Mark. Chill, and get the hell out of here before you cause a scene. I take a deep breath and start to gather up my things, throwing some cash down on the table. As I leave the diner, I text guard telling him to check out what I've just posted, that shit's going down. It's only after I've sent him the message that my adrenaline starts to die down and is replaced by a different feeling. The fear that Sarah may have been in Chicago. She may have even been in that battle. Back in my truck, I open up my netbook again and send off a quick email. Sarah, please, just find some way to let me know you're safe.